Okay. Here's the 12th reading. It is the first one. Card one is the Hangman.
Yod, fire.
Mm-hmm. The second card is Six of Cups, pleasure. Third card, 21, the universe. Fourth card, Prince of Discs. Fifth card, Nine of Cups, happiness.
What was the word for that again?
Happiness.
Happiness.
Sixth card, Five of Swords, defeat. Arc of Influence, number 7, the Chariot, number 8, 7 of Swords, futility, number 9, the Sun.
Wow, all these majors. And you made a point, 21 is the reverse of 12.
Mm-hmm.
Hangman. The elemental spread.
Yep.
Well, I can see how some of this stuff fits in some interesting ways. But I'm gonna reserve my happy talk about this place.
Let's read the chapter first and see where we go with it.
Yeah, right. let's see. Now we need to do we have to decide who's going to read what.
Yeah, they're certainly seeing things from a different point of view in the Hangman, that first card.
Mm-hmm.
And they're moving into a state of supreme pleasure, so that works for the first two cards for me. And the universe fits fine. And
yeah.
I think that, and as far as I'm concerned, the Prince of Discs is, to me, is about meditation and is slowing. It's one of the nights. It's the slower of the nights. It's slow and moving, and it's moving meditation. So I think that all fits the first four cards. But I don't understand the defeat and the futility.
Well, that can be taken many ways from a spiritual point of view. So let's see. If we can work.
It's almost like when you got there, what do you do with it? Okay, you did it. Now what?
Well, it's perhaps the defeat of reason, and the futility of non-surrender.
Well, it's like climbing a mountain. Okay, you get to the peak. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We actually have that, and I also, there's a variety of things I want to say about this this thing, but I'm going to wait until after we've assigned parts, which we didn't do, and...
Well, you know what's getting me on the first page with the, you see the stick figures? The very
first? Yeah.
They're wrong, according to the illustration. That follows, especially Prometheus' stick figure. The weight is on, the stick figure doesn't follow the illustration. Someone should have picked up on that one.
I don't understand your point.
Yeah, well, yeah. What pictures are you talking about? Are you talking about pictures in the comic?
Yes, on the comic, yes.
You're talking about the two stick figures?
Yes.
The purple circle or sun?
Yeah, you know, the first, very first one.
Well, the legs are different for one thing.
Yes, exactly. Any of us who draw know that, you know. Promethea is totally different. She develops. I don't know if that was done on purpose or not.
Well, actually, let's talk about that later.
Okay, sorry.
Because I think it was done on purpose, to be honest with you. If you look at what they did, if you look at the very, very beginning of that chapter, but let's assign parts.
Okay.
So who's going to, we know, you're going to be Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Soon to, I think this is your last appearance as Barbara. I think she does an exit after this chapter. And then Sophie. We got a Sophie. Who wants to be Sophie?
I'll be Sophie. But we have another Sophie coming out. Maybe somebody else will be that Sophie.
All right.
We have Promethea Sophie.
So, David, do you want to be the ever adorable Steve?
Yeah, I'll be Steve.
The hunky Steve?
Yes. I guess I'll be the weeping gorilla in texture. Come at the end.
I said I would do Trish.
You're going to do Trish.
And you know what else I would like to do, Paul, if I may?
Uh-huh.
The circular poem, kind of in the middle of the chapter.
Which is on text, huh? You mean like, okay.
It's like where it says all one in the middle, and then it has the two concentric rings.
Where it has all those words?
Yeah, well, no. Where it says...
Yeah, the words in the bubble?
All born, all fed, all grown, all led, that one.
Yeah, okay.
It's like the wheel of fate. But
yeah, it is, yeah.
All right, so... let us begin... or end, as the case may be.
Did we draw the cards? I'm sorry.
Yes, we did.
Okay, well, I'll get them later. So.
Okay.
Let's describe. So since we're dealing with very little dialogue here with the first page, we have the Promethea cover, in which Promethea is drawn. With a basically gold ink or a sepia ink against white, and we have the beginning concentric circles with the basically an empty circle, and then the next circle out has little stick figures, and then the second circle down from that, which would be the third concentric circle, there are two mocked out figures. These are figures these are sketch figures, you know, like those figure dolls you see.
Yeah. Those are the armatures. Those are the the artist did an armature sketch.
Yeah, an armature sketch. And that's what you have. And then it says dialogue here, and little bubbles. And then the fourth one out. They're drawn in, given a little personality, and instead of dialogue, it says something, something. And then the fifth state, which is where we have manifestation. So you get the first. So actually, that follows the four worlds quite nicely. Assuming that the four worlds all deal with representation, and the full circle is non-manifestation, and then you have, I guess let's see, that's Barbara, right?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Something.
There's something.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Sophie. Sophie says from nothing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
was a way to get through that first page.
Right.
And then we get to the double paged issue, and I'll let you guys deal with it.
One perfect moment. Always like this. I remember how it will be. This is God. Here we are again. Always here. Always now.
Something.
So, let's deal
from
with
nothing.
The inner circle.
One.
From none.
This.
From bliss.
White.
From what?
Something from nothing, one from none.
And then I notice in the center, though it may not be too visible from based on finding, we have the all-seeing triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Here we are again. One, just the idea of one, of something, for that to even exist, where there was only nothing. This is God.
Yes, and God is one.
And all, God is all. One is all. One perfect moment.
I thought that there was something somewhere else before being here. But we've always been here, haven't we? We've all always been here.
Are we God? Barbara? I just thought.
Wait a minute, where are you?
Where are you?
At the bottom
of the page. You're reading it backwards, I think.
Oh, so sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Always here, always now, here in Keter, the crown, here in the first, white spark of being. Barbara? I just thought, are we God?
Yes, and I remember how it will be. God is everything. Everything is God. God is all.
All born, all fed, all grown, all led, all helped, all harmed, all cursed, all charmed, all brutal, all holy, all wisdom, all folly, all knowing, all seeing, all suffering, all being, all doing, all done, all one.
All one. All God. All Keter. One perfect moment when everything happens. Always like this. All the white brilliance, the bay leaf, the amber grass. Here we are, again.
Yes, here we are again, and we are each other. And we are God.
Yes, and God is one, and one is next to nothing, the sacred, blissful whiteness.
That.
Go on, goes across.
Yeah, it
goes across.
Nothing, I can barely read mine. Nothing, a single.
No, goes across.
No,
across. Goes across. Under the other page.
On the other page. That we are, Cynthia. On top. On top of the right page.
That we are all part of, that barely exists, that is almost nothing. A single point coming into being out of. Did something just...
Did something just happen? Yes, I think so. It was like white. White light.
Yes. It was like not being there. But it was like being everywhere. Being everything.
Are we fusing with it? Are we fusing with this place?
With God. Yes, to melt into the whiteness, to no longer be us, to be it, to be God. And know as God knows, and see as God sees, to be this forever.
And then we have
Quinum Otis Pecadoros Quinum Oso Marcia Eos Fornitos. Our Father who art in heaven, I hate you. How could you let that happen? Gloria Padre Adios Hydros Al Espiritu Santos. His keys are Tan Jaxiu. O God, the Shlike on the Like Veal, O God. Domine Dura Noah Supporta Fasa Sio Trisio.
So that we have discs of light.
Kill them, Lord. Kill our enemies.
Yeah. Well, you have a page with discs of light or and all with languages, right?
Yeah.
Should we... And all speaking to God in some way.
Even a song.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the issue of here, the bubbles. This may have been an artistic convention that they lighted upon, but I did have an experience of when I was had this ecstasy. It was a non-LSD induced natural experience in which when I got up in these very high out-of-body experience, it was definitely out-of-body experience, out of time, motion. There was a sense of bubbles, and my thing of the bubbles is they were like archetypes.
I must say, if you go down to the very towards the corner, the fourth bubble, directly from the corner of the bottom of the right page. God, I hope the lettering is right.
Where is that?
All the way on the bottom of the right page, you have a half a bubble.
Oh, yes,
and then
I can see this.
God, that would only be an artist.
The lettering is right.
That is great.
Isn't that wonderful? Put his own little prayer. I hope I didn't misspell any words. Oh, I'm going to hear it from every person in the... Paul, I'm sorry. I thought that was very funny, though. I mean, even if I'm as sanctifying as this is, this...
laughter is part of every... I mean, God has to laugh with us.
So. Yeah, sure, that's right. It's a wonderful comedy. There's the suicide bomber, and there's the World Trade Center being flown into.
Yes, we see all aspects of life.
Up where? On the next.
In the next page. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Next page. The.
See the surgery.
And it's interesting. You see the language has a kind of aspiration in it. And then you have this concrete images bubble representing actions that we do, but they could also be results of our prayers too.
Yeah, somebody being born, somebody capsizing, a cat napping. I like that one.
And then out of this this thing, I think again it goes across the page. It goes across both pages.
Yes.
Just that's the, and I guess who's speaking? It's
Promethea. Sophie.
Promethea. Yeah, Sophie is speaking.
Okay. We're going back.
This endless white moment is where it starts. Well, there's something before that, but I can't see it.
Heaven. It says heaven. Okay. It actually picks up from two pages earlier. She says,
that's a continuation.
And know as God knows and see as God sees, to be this forever, it would be like, turn page, heaven.
Okay,
Cynthia, you're on.
This endless white moment, this is the crown of, Were we gone again? I thought there was nothing but me. It was like being a baby. I thought,
Barbara, is that you?
I think so. Wasn't I once Barbara Shelley? Ramirez? Something like that. Who wants to know you? Wait, who wants to know? Are you? Oh, Steve. Oh, Steve, baby, it's you. Oh, God, thank you.
Barb, oh, sweetheart. Oh, my Barbara.
Baby, it's you. I came here, for I almost forgot. In the white, I almost forgot.
It's okay. Everything's okay now. I can't believe you climbed here.
I couldn't have done it except for Sophie. She's Promethea after me. She helped me so much.
So you're Steve. Were you fused like we were?
I guess so. I was like, I was everything, this perfect bliss. I didn't even remember being me, but I remembered you. I don't want to be God without you, love.
So what do we do now? What do we have? Steve.
Where are you? You're at the bottom of the page?
On the bottom of the page.
She says, what choices do we have?
Ah, that's easy. Be serpents or be doves, but choose ye wisely.
What do you mean?
When we climb up the tree, winding from sphere to sphere, then we're serpents. The serpent is the will to climb and rise, the will to live. But when we choose to descend from the sacred purity back into the turmoil and suffering of the world, then we're doves. The dove is the will to sacrifice, to descend, the will to die. The will to die to this glorious world of spirit and live again in matter. The will to take a little more light back down into the world where its needs is, back down there.
Oh, God, look at it. It's the edge, then, the edge of Kether. Steve, would you really want to give this up? To go back into the pain of the world?
With you, baby, in a minute. No question. I love you.
So, do we just jump?
What? All that way? But isn't that sort of...
Sort of foolish, yeah. I say we do it.
Me too.
But what do we reincarnate? Or something? Have whole new lives?
I don't know any life, sweetheart. Any venture, it's always a fool's leap.
He's right, Barb.
Oh, what the hell?
Okay, I mean, the Barbara, okay. What a trip, what a universe. Oh, God, I love this. Oh, God, all existence flying up to us, rushing past.
Oh, this is wonderful.
It's okay, baby. Just let it happen. Well, I don't know who. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it starts
yeah,
at the
sorry.
Top. Yeah.
Oh, yes. There goes Gabura and Kesed. And Steve? Steve, something's happening to us. We're changing.
It's okay, baby. Just let it happen.
Barbara, wait. Am I ever going to see you again? Barbara, Steve. Oh, down there, isn't that?
And back to Earth as doves so far. Malkuth. And we see doves. And then we see a person.
Okay, just a moment. Push there.
Congratulations, Mrs. Tanzi. It's twins, like we said. One of each.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've just found Barbara and Steve again.
Mm-hmm. And there
and,
we go.
Look at that. I think we have a somewhat spaced out Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She lands by a tree.
She looks like the tree just hit her in the head.
Yeah, right. Oh, so she's a walk-in.
The old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, who does the old lady? You want me to do the old lady? I'll do the old lady.
Okay.
Hi, sweetheart. Looks like you just got back from somewhere. It's a lovely evening, ain't it?
It's beautiful. And everything's just what it is, without having to mean something. Like you, you're not a sphinx or anything.
Aha, no, I ain't. But my husband's reckoning I'm a mystery all the time. You. Take care now, darling.
That's a good one to remember, folks. My husband reckons I'm a mystery.
Reckons, yes.
Okay. Texture. Following last month's mass resignation by all of the personalities of New York Mayor Sonny Baskerville. Tipped by pollsters as Baskerville's most likely successor is former adult movie queen Uva Cascade, star of The Usual Slut Sex and Doing John Malkovich.
Oh, my God.
Ms. Cascade said yesterday, if appointed, I promise increased public spending and an improved transportation system and hand relief. This is texture. Meanwhile, England's sulk rock supremo, Les Miserables, has canceled tomorrow's New York appearance at Stalin's following what doctors called a severe bout of elation. Asked to comment, Miserable said, "We are all of us in some gutter, having some of us look like stars." Support band Limp's frontman, Monty Sykes, added, "It's all in the Midsummer Arabian Nights dream of Geronius Lyre. This is texture." Investigations continue into the murder of the recently established New York science criminal, Bruno Jellyhead Similac. Interviewed in jail, Similac's former Evil Eight cohorts, Angela Queen Bitch Mendez and Edward Ed Zeppelin Furness, expressed alarm. Tony Tiger looks different. Best burgers this side of the moon. Uvula Cascade loves you. They say it's the doll who doomed Jellyhead. What if he's after all of us? I mean, the doll's a freaking psycho, and how's the freak did he know the Similac mother freaking was Jellyhead freaking head anyway? I mean, we was his freaking crew. We didn't know that freaking fur was Adam. You know what I'm saying? Meanwhile, swell guy Marvel Hamilton expressed caution in his comments to the media. All we know is that one of his painted dolls, Hollow Points, killed Bruno Similac. We're not certain the doll's responsible or even still alive. If this was his work, it's difficult to see why he should single out a minor criminal. I mean, the painted doll is very possibly insane, but he's not motiveless, flat, or all random. To me, it just feels wrong. A New York spokesperson stressed that there has been no verified sightings of the painted doll since his apparent death last year. This is texture. Somebody's got to be the person in the cab. Yeah, anywhere around here would look good. That's probably Sophie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anywhere around here would have been good. This is great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. To the door.
Okay.
Hi. Oh, you came back in time to start college again, huh? I thought you might just stay in Europe for good and disown me completely.
I haven't been to Europe.
Uh-huh. So you lied about that. What were you, screwing around with some boyfriend? Jesus, Sophie. I mean, you think you know everything, but you don't. What happens if you get pregnant? Your whole life, all the things you think you're going to do, it all gets washed away. And now, look, you've lied to me. You've...
Mom, shut up and listen. I'm Promethea, the science heroine, who's on texture all the time. That's me. And I haven't been to Europe. I've been to heaven.
Sophie, what is this?
No, Mom, I'm... No, Mom, don't say, is this drugs? It's not drugs. And I'm not crazy. I'm Promethea. Come on. A character I'm researching. And she just turns up in real life? How could it not be me?
But...
Mom, as part of being Promethea, I've traveled to places where people go when they die. I met my dad. Juan Felipe Estrada Cotí, stud in his ear, tattoo on his arm, with a snake with wings.
You what? You met him in Europe or, I don't know.
Mom, I didn't go to Europe, remember? I went to heaven. Dad, Juan, he's dead, Mom. He died 18 years back now.
What are you saying?
He was dealing coke. He didn't want you to know. When he tried to get out of the life, his partners killed him. He didn't leave you, Mom. He said to tell you that he always loved you.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Sophie, baby. I never told you. I never told you his name. I never said about the tattoo.
Shh. Just accept it. He loved you. He still loves you. And I love you, too, more than I love anybody.
Oh, Sophie. Oh, God, I've been so shitty to you.
No, no, you weren't. I just didn't know how much you wanted me, how much you sacrificed for me. I've done some growing up while I was away, Mom.
I don't know what to say. I love you. I love you. I love you. Oh, God, baby.
I know, Mom. I know you do. It's all going to be different with us now.
Yeah, definitely. All the booze, I'm going to kick that in the head. And the guys I brought home, honey, I'm sorry about all that.
You don't have to be sorry. From now on, it's all going to be okay. Everything's going to go right.
Next, cross moon, star, shapes in the sand. Everything goes wrong.
Oh, maybe that has something to do with the future in
our reading.
Yep.
So instead of everything going to go right, everything goes wrong.
So that's the deadly sentence. The deadly phrase.
Yeah,
famous last word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually probably a pretty good place to begin now, is to go.
Do you want to repeat the cards, Paul?
Yes, please.
Let's repeat the cards
For
the benefit of those of us who had to leave.
Okay, it's the Hangman is number one. Six of Cups Pleasure is number two. The Universe, number three. Number four is Prince of Discs. Number five is Nine of Cups, Happiness. Number six is Five of Swords, Defeat. Arc of Influence, the Chariot, number seven.
Seven and seven.
Right. Number 8 is Seven of Swords, Futility. And number 9 is the Sun.
No, actually, all of it makes a lot of sense to me, even the Five of Swords defeat. Because I do think it's the defeat of reason, the leap of faith. That Steve, Barbara, and Sophie Prometheus make.
You mean in terms of when they decide to become doves and return to the earth?
Right. And futility has me a little bollock. Oh, I know. I suspect it's texture. It's the world. The world, the mystery of evil, the mystery of joy, the mystery.
And all the
and the futility of the mind trying to grasp it all.
Right. And we saw all those scenes earlier in the chapter, like the cat napping and the baby being born,
right,
surgery
right.
happening. It's just like it is futile because we're going to die anyway. You know, I mean, life ends in death. Well, this life ends in death. So, I mean, you know, whatever we do is a little bit futile.
Well, I didn't mean to do is futile. What my take was is to try and understand.
In the futility of trying to understand this world.
Yeah.
Yes, in Malkuth. Obviously, in Keter, they had a knowing beyond knowing. The mind wasn't a part of it. It was a spiritual soul knowing. But in Malkuth, it's futile to try and understand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's how I took it.
Yeah. I took it the same way.
I looked at the Five of Swords and the Seven of Swords. Maybe both of them, or maybe just one. Even when I first read this, because this is the volume I read years ago, I wondered if Steve and Barbara, it's something about the look on the baby's faces, but when they're like, oh, we're in love, we're soulmates, we're going to be together forever, and then they're like, oh, wait, we're brother and sister.
Oh, boy. What are we going to do now? No sex.
Yeah. Well, so I always wondered back then, and I wonder now, if there's something about defeat or futility in terms of expectations.
That's a very good point, but you can be, twins have a very special relationship.
Obviously, they don't get to have sex.
But wait a minute.
In terms of the taboos and incest taboos and whatnot.
Yeah,
no,
but look, there's two kinds of twins, right? There are maternal
twins.
Yeah,
paternal twins. Identical.
And if you have different sexes, you got paternal twins.
Paternal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not maternal twins.
No, it's fraternal and identical.
And identical.
Right.
I kind of like Paul's interpretation.
Fraternal and maternal.
Well, no. The thing is that maternal twins, which are identical twins, are the ones where they look alike, and they're usually they're the same sex.
They actually come from a single egg.
Yeah,
right.
Whereas with fraternal twins, two eggs have been fertilized at the same time.
Right.
So it is really just like a brother and sister who happen to be born.
But the look on the face is like, oh goodness.
Yeah. Like, this isn't what we...
Yeah, we wanted to be back and enjoy ourselves.
And it is true, you know, when you go up to the nursery, the babies look so wise.
Oh,
and then they sort of... In fact, Annie Dillard has a whole essay on that. She goes into a maternity ward, and she watches babies being born and how wise they look.
Yeah.
And then they seem to fall asleep.
Yeah,
you know, when they open their eyes again, they're very innocent.
I read something one time that just has always stayed with me, but doggone it, I can't remember where I read it or who said it. But it was a mother talking. She said, I was looking at my newborn baby, and I thought, he knows everything, and with every passing second, he's forgetting.
Yes. Yeah,
and that I was a pregnant person at the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the time, and it just really had a profound impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He knows everything, but with every second he's forgetting. So, yeah.
That's welcome to our world.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Welcome to Maku.
Well, there's a number of things taking place here. My view of the future outcome being defeat and again, I read the arc of influence as anticipatory. So, and because I read that anticipatoriness, I would say that it makes sense to look back from last week and consider the cards that were anticipatory. The cards that were anticipatory last week were the future outcome was the Queen of Cups, the Knight of Swords, the Ten of Cups, Satiety, and the Eighth Place, and the Seven of Wands, Valor. Now, do you see how all of those characteristics, Satiety, the Queen of Cups, and the Seven of Wands being the Valor, particularly going in, which was the ninth in the ninth place there, represents kind of them in that going into that empty space of Keter, right? That was because we're and the pure pleasure of heaven. And I do want to emphasize the pleasure of heaven here in terms of the that it's almost too much to endure. And then we start this week, right? Again, what we have is the hidden motivation. We have the Nine of Cups, happiness, which is just one down from satiety.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it does refer to the twins. The Six of Cups, I would say, refers to the twins.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually,
and, as
I look at it.
Yeah. Well, and then going to the main line, which is the element line, is you have the 12, the Hangman. The
yeah.
12, right?
Yeah.
Well, so what? 12, of course, means the 12 is the zodiac, right? It represents the 3 and the 4.
Then we have 21 in universe.
Yeah.
The numbers imposed.
Well, it's what?
Right,
yeah, that's
left,
three
right.
Sevens, yeah.
You know, when I look at these things, the motivation and the outcome on the cards 5 and 6 is that Sophie and Barbara and Steve are in this complete state of happiness at one point. They've found each other, they're going through in Keter, everything is as one again, and that's fine. But they're moving into enough, they're moving down the tree, and that's the six, that's the outcome, and they're going down into fear. I think Five of Swords in this sense is in the sense of fear. They don't know where they're going. There's a fearful state moving into the unknown world again. And they get into the arc of, what do we call that? And that chariot is about... Yeah, and the chariot is all about change. It's willpower, but it's also about movement
mm-hmm.
into something new.
Yeah.
And then there's a sense of futility because they know they're moving into something that they've already been in and it's probably going back into this war, and yet the sun is there ahead of them. So there's a great possibility of great wealth ahead, but they don't know how to quite reach it. I think that goes very well in my mind.
Yeah, well, as the future in terms of what they're going to meet on the earth.
Yeah, but things that Sophie's met her mother, and they've resolved everything at that point. Things are really looking pretty good for her right there.
Yeah, you know, you see where I'd put some of that. I'd still put that in the. Again, I tend to read the arc of influence more anticipatory of the next chapter.
Well, and not only of the next chapter, but
I think
Sophie
that
says everything's going to be all right, you know.
No.
All right, and ha-ha, you know.
Paul,
if you would excuse me, Johanna, when you designed the spread, how did you see it?
Dear, it was dictated to me. I don't take credit for designing the spread. This was Harold's doing.
Well,
What did Harold tell you about the Ark of Oblivion?
Well, you know what happened?
How do you read the script?
The Arc of Influence is basically what we always want to know the outcome, right? The outcome is the sixth card down.
Right.
But sometimes that needs explanation. I always find there's always an explanation. People require an explanation of their future because it's not always what they expect.
Yeah, nobody wants to get the Five of Swords.
Yeah, everything looks okay here. Then how come I'm getting the Five of Swords?
I'm here to feel good, not to feel bad.
Right.
Know.
So you see it as the explanation. The Arc of Influence is the explanation.
Of the future and the influences that will dictate the future. Totally.
So you can see that why I'm emphasizing anticipatory.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the future outcome. We're talking about the next chapter. We can't say the next chapter. But that's, I think we can read it, as commentary on elements of this chapter, too.
Mm-hmm.
But just in terms of the way the layout seems to be set up. What I wanted to emphasize, though, is let's look closely at the Hanged Man.
Yes, I was going to ask you to go back to that.
Because we start out this chapter essentially in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hanged Man here represents the full zodiac, and I just happen to be reading some real obscure stuff on the Jewish use of the zodiac. According to ancient zodiacal theories, speciesations, in other words, the reason species existed was that they were all held together by stars. In other words, the configuration of stars is what created a species. So the reasons that horses were horses and fishes were fishes and sea serpents were sea serpents and goats were goats was because of the species were set in the stars. So
set
ancient
in the
idea, right? It's out of Ptolemy. It's out of ancient astrology. I pulled it out of a medieval book on the world by Ibn Ezra, who was one of the first Jewish Kabbalists who integrated astrology into Kabbalah. But and I just read it. I just happened to be reading it last night. So it's a serendipity falls into the classic thing here. So we think about this, particularly this idea of why don't pigs become fishes and this whole meringue of interbreeding possibility is because of the stability of the zodiac. This is ancient cosmology, right?
I was going to say Darwin might have something to say about that, but
even Darwin didn't understand.
Right.
Understand, and even now we don't understand.
Yeah.
Even with our big breakthroughs with the genome and stuff, speciesization is not understood yet.
Yeah. Well, they're crossing species.
Well, what they're discovering is that there are links between species that they never noticed before because they were looking at...
No, I'm saying they're attempting to cross, for instance, fish with grains. And
Yeah.
Well...
What? I'm sorry.
Grains.
Grain?
Corn. Corn,
oh my
for
God.
Instance.
Well, they've already taken some insect larvae or something and added it to corn or something like that.
And they plan to add it to fish or that's
You have to realize that the corn that we have or that our mothers had was a whole mutation. Grain and corn are very easily mutated. And what is so interesting, if the corn was not mutated, we wouldn't be able to eat. So this was a natural mutation.
Well, and actually, one of the classic mutations that happens all over the place is our and it's right now is the perfect time for it. It's one of the reasons why we might have it as the end of year things are pumpkins, squashes. Mm. You can't, if you plant squashes, you know, together, different species of squashes,
they'll cross,
they will, crossbreed, and mm-hmm. you'll get the strangest looking thing.
Let me tell you, I grew a nice crop of what I call punkalopes one day. Hard as stone. Yes.
I got news for you, the punkalopes are delicious. They call them, over here, they call them Russian cantaloupes.
But you know,
you have to try one.
They were totally hard. They were like rock.
No, well, this, they got the cantaloupe, they were able to do the cantaloupe skin with the sweetness of the pumpkin and cantaloupe combined.
Wow.
Oh, they're delicious. I'm telling you, pure sugar. They're wonderful.
Well, I had bad punkalopes.
So. Okay, sorry about that.
Yours was a mixture of winter.
Get back to the lab, meep.
It might be interesting that it's in the fall when gourds in particular become, you know, are harvestable, and when they have such as interbreeding, which is also, you know, the time when they recognize, you know, the All Souls Day and All Saints Day.
Yes.
And the Celtic New Year of Halloween.
Yep.
That it's the end of the year. The reason why is that this is the year is completed, and here's where things aren't quite the way they're supposed to be because they're all wrapped up in this interspecies. Notice that they don't have follow the drinking gourd is not. Hey, actually, there is a drinking gourd up there in the sky, isn't there?
Hmm. Yeah, the Big Dipper. The Big Dipper.
The hangman is also an image of the fetus in the womb.
Right.
And there's the snake underneath him there. It's kind of like the kundalini, you know, just not...
Well, they're very clear about the snake being the ascending order.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the doves being the descending. However, do you notice that those are counterintuitive?
It absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would have said otherwise. You know, I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
But given the Thoth representation, that's the Thoth representation.
No, but also it's a hanged man representation. It's the world turned topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I want to point out...
Okay, I get that, yeah.
Some of my friends here use some interesting symbolism for that in looking at the Rider-Waite-Smith version, not the Toth version.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of riffing off what Paul just said, but the hangman, of course, is upside down the woman in the world card, so my friends relate the two, but then they associate the hangman, because the world card is like the birth canal, the birth process, they say the hangman is the baby being born, and that is highly relevant to the chapter.
Right.
Yeah, and the universe card, you know, with the woman with the things around there, does look vaginal.
But also, remember, the universe, the birthing card, universe, is an heir.
Is a virgin.
Yeah.
But we also have the sun, and the sun, hangman universe, is definitely a birth.
But and also, the hangman is between severity and splendor on the tree of life, between and Hod. And the thing is, I think that's indicative of what the chapter's about, too. It's moving into the splendor of Keter.
Right.
You know, what I'm finding as we're doing these readings after our chapter, and now with full reading an anticipatory aspect to the Arc of Influence, I wonder if we were to sit down and, you know, have a client across from us, to be able to represent things in this way. I mean, they would look at us cockeyed, get up, and walk away.
Maybe. Depends on the client.
Of course.
I don't know if you're talking about the spread. I use this spread all the time.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying the way we've interpreted.
Oh, well. If I may, the universe... The card of the universe, which is the birth card, is in the element of air, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
And the element of Earth, you have the Prince of Discs. So you have Earth in Earth, and the moving forward, as in the chariot.
No, that's the Prince of Discs.
Is in
not the page of discs. It's not the page of pentacles. It's not Earth in Earth.
I'm saying the element of Earth, of discs.
But here we have the Prince of Discs, which is an Earth card in the Earth position.
In the Earth position.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is moving, which shows the reincarnation also.
Yeah, I agree.
So you were saying it would be, that Earth in Earth would have been the Princess of Discs?
Yeah.
In the toss system, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not going towards the cards. Other applications.
Right.
I'm just going in the sense of what's on the surface, in the sense that we know it's an Earth element.
I'd like to give a little slight disquisition here. partly based on the reading and partly based on a couple of other things. There is there's a cheat in this.
A cheat?
A cheat, yes. It has to do with the motive of the characters from the very beginning. The motive of the characters was for Barbara to find her boyfriend.
Her husband,
Frank.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they didn't have what I would call the pure motives of the narcissistically enraptured magician mystic who, when seeking the divine, is not seeking immediately to pop down back into Malkuth.
Well, they didn't know what they were going to find.
Wait a minute, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there's a cheat about what the nature of some of the higher reaches are. For one thing, we get to Keter, which is the beginning of it's the Big Bang of the creative universe. You can't say it's heaven. You can't say it's the starry reach beyond the stars. But we also know that there are 3-4 levels beyond that are utterly undesignatable. They have no will or no intention to go into those deeper levels. Those deeper levels would have led to, that's where they would have been transmogrified from being just a human being to being, a sort of world historic personage. In other words, that's where the true alchemy of the spirit takes place, not the alchemy of the soul. You could say that, and so in some ways, using my threefold level of you have the body, the soul, and the spirit, and the soul really represents the way spirit communicates with people in body, which means people in Malkuth, and in our going up the tree of life. The way we've been reading it, as being aware of the soulful qualities of the potential for life in terms of levels of understanding that we may or may not be aware of when we're living our life. However, when we finally get to Keter, we've finally reached the real beginning of spirit, of pure spirit, which is spirit that is not oriented towards re-embodiment. So when they say, let's go back, let's fly back, let's become doves and jump back down and bring a little light to the world, they aren't light enough yet. They haven't gone into the heriogamous, the sacred marriage. They haven't really gone. They sort of went to the threshold of the Big Bang and said, "This is enough. Now we've done enough. We know everything we need to know," and they go back. Ultimately, they only learned a very little. And that where and if they had gone into those 3 other levels, for one thing, they would have repeated the whole tree again at each level. And in each level, it would become more and more refined, because we know that the tree of life has 4 there are four trees to the tree of life, four levels, or 40 heavens, or whatever you want to call it. So my emphasis here in terms of the true magic of all of this stuff, and I'm not faulting Moore or anything else. I'm just simply saying that in terms of the tradition, the mystical tradition in particular, Gnostic tradition to a degree, and the magical tradition, where you really want, where the real power is in going beyond those beyond situations. As I said, what would happen is you repeat the tree of life again.
Well, that's why they were born again as twins, Barbara and Steve.
But yeah, but you see, this is doing it in a mono way in which there's only one tree. There's actually four trees, and so. So in some ways, then, the dove does not descend, but ascends. And that's why it's counterintuitive.
Well, you'll have to explain that a little bit.
That's amazing, Paul. Yeah, that's really,
I think I understand what you're saying.
I'm trying to follow you. Now, in
but
one of the trees, we ascend as serpents, we descend as doves, metaphorically. And in the tree you're describing now, we ascend as doves and we descend as serpents.
Are you saying, Paul, is the descent of the dove, it actually goes into another tree starting over again at Malcolm?
Not in this particular case, because in this particular case, none of the characters.
Right, but in general.
Sophie, Promethea, nor Barbara Promethea, nor Steve have any vision of the alchemical transmutation
right.
of the higher levels of Keter.
Right.
So what they do is that they do, as do most of us when we die, we unconsciously go up, go through our things, and get popped back down here at a relative same level of consciousness. Now it takes, and then during life you have the opportunity to explore this stuff, and this is why I tend to, with David when he says you can't go beyond a certain level, and I hear this all the time when I'm talking to Jungians. I interviewed a Jungian the other day, and he was going on about the same thing, The thing is, you actually, the invitation is to go beyond all of this stuff. You go beyond it, but you don't go beyond it for itself. Ultimately, you may find yourself incarnated again, but you're going to be incarnated at a different level of integration. In other words, there is soul growth, which is what most people are concerned with in their life. And then there's spiritual growth, and they are really, in some ways, spirit doesn't grow, so it's sort of a misnomer. But there are spiritual levels, and the spiritual levels are there. But for the most part, most people are never attuned enough to know that those levels even exist. And I would say that essentially in this story, that's pretty much the case.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying. It's good symbolism, but let us remember that there are, many more. Many more universes to conquer, or galaxies to explore, or whatever we want to call it. You know, the universe is vaster than we could possibly know.
But
so that's the end of my disposition.
I think what you said at the very beginning of this was very apt to exactly what you're saying. Their motives were not to go beyond. They had different motives. They had Barbara wanted to find Steve, and Sophie wanted to help Barbara.
Right.
Period.
That was
their motive.
And that motive meant that they did not understand the invitation to go beyond when they got together.
Right.
You see?
Well, no. We've been concerned with the world of the materia, with the world of the imagination, and how the imagination can aid soul growth and a comprehension of spiritual level.
Right.
How does that enter into the next tree?
In other words, assuming they were ascending or continuing
assuming,
to ascend.
Assuming, yeah.
Assuming that. Yeah. Well, essentially what happens is you would have the same type of thing happen. In other words, it would be sort of like Keter and Malkuth are the same thing. Remember, that's often seen that they're identical. The crown and Malkuth are identical.
They're static. Their energies stay what they are, no
yeah.
matter what. But
yeah.
the others.
So what there is so that the ascent, the continuing ascent could be, and we might be able to argue for this later, considering that what happens to Sophie when she comes back as Promethea. Is that she now is completely ready, both as Promethea and as Sophie, to preside over the end of the world, which is the rest of the story arc as far as what's his name goes. At that level, you could say then that that Sophie didn't really descend. But actually continue to ascend into into another level of Keter, into a more refined space. And usually when you get to these more refined spaces, apocalyptic imagery is, where the world's coming to an end and everything's falling apart, is pretty much the way people see things, because things are so different. Like, we're seeing the signs of our own civilization start to crack and fall
yeah.
apart. I mean,
I was going to ask, when Sophie awakens in Malkuth here, it's very futuristic. Was it like that beforehand and I don't remember, or is she in, like, some slightly altered universe?
You're talking
about
the world of texture?
Yeah. I think they're pretty much the same. Is
yeah.
it the same with us? There's like cars flying and stuff
yeah,
like that.
That's
oh yeah,
nice.
that was
yeah.
from the beginning. I don't
yeah.
remember.
Yeah.
I guess there was.
She's also going to find herself in another couple of chapters in hanging out in Tom Strong's Metropolis, which is the city that he hangs out in. Yeah, Tom Strong is another series of comics that Moore did, which is about this guy. He was a science superhero. He makes a guest appearance, and I think it's three or four chapters down the road. But of course, the thing is, I think he's concerned. They're basically what they're doing is, Sophie goes on the lam. Essentially, she hides out, becomes, moves to another city, changes her name, and lives anonymously.
At the end of book four, the third page from the end, we have a hanged man.
Mm-hmm. That's under the judgment. That's under the judgment there.
Yeah, yeah. And then before that, the devil.
Or the tower. Yeah, the tower before that. Then the devil.
I don't see the tower yet.
You must have turned two pages together because it's
maybe
between.
Maybe I did.
Yeah, it's between the hangman.
Oh, here we go.
The
yep, the tower. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's
that's a couple of chapters. That'll be in 2 weeks, then we'll be getting to that chapter.
Yeah.
It's an interesting chapter, this judgment chapter. The interesting thing here, again, is the idea of happiness. That one of the things they talked about with heaven was, how everything was so fine and then it sort of like fade out of existence.
Yeah.
Whereas... you know, heaven for someone who's not prepared for it feels like hell. what is light and is incredible, at least incredible, almost incomparable pleasure and bliss for someone who isn't prepared for it is like terrible pain and searing fire that causes one to crumble.
Where do you ascertain that for?
Where do I entertain that from what? From
ascertain that from what?
Looking at the hidden motivation is the Nine of Cups is
I see.
And then the future outcome is the Five of Swords defeat.
I see.
Also, the Hanged Man represents this profound sweep of things. I think the 21 Universe card in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. Probably that's where the emphasis is really pushed about the fading in and out of light, you know, the pure white stuff, you know, that is kind of described in an airy sense way. And then the Six of Cups, pleasure, which is again is sort of the motive for Barbara and. And to a degree also Sophie, in the sense that she wants to help her friend. You get a pleasure from helping your friends.
Right.
And then this explains then the Prince of Discs. That's Steve.
Hmm.
We don't know much about Steve.
No, we don't. Do we find out? In the book, do we find out more about him?
I don't think there's much more about him at all. But he's the one who says, "Let's get out of here. Let's reincarnate."
Right.
Mm.
He's the one who says, "Let's jump down back to Earth." He's the one who brings in the swords and serpents
and the
serpents and dove analogy. And it's when he shows up that suddenly you're out of the white light and you're on the edge and you're ready and you can descend.
Which also says motivation.
Yes.
Because his motivation, why would you want to do that? You're in perfect unity in the light. He wanted to get it on with Barbara again. And so God said, "You want to bet? I'm making you brother and sister."
So what he said,
"I don't want to be God without you, baby."
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
So in some ways he's making an invitation, but it's an invitation that actually leads to, you know, he sees it, hidden motivation, that this is going to be happiness, but the actual motivation, given that, you know, what happens to most of us when we reincarnate again as babies, it's really a Five of Swords moment. It's defeat.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit,
boy, am I taking
again.
A traditional viewpoint again. You know, the hell with life, you know. You know, and of course, then the Chariot represents, the development of ego, developmental stuff.
I think that's true in the weight deck, but not in the top deck.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Chariot is definitely a Christic Grail image, and that whereas weight, in theory, according to Mary Greer, the miners are the Grail story. I think in the top deck, the Chariot is really the epitome of the Grail.
I talk about, you know, synchronicity and the mundane level. I started a series on Current TV. That's the name of the TV station. And about heroin addiction. But the cure is with Tibetan monks. It's a British series. And it is totally right on to what we're talking. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, because in some ways, that is what we're talking about here. The response,
addiction to life.
No, it's particularly the Prince of Discs as motive to incarnate is a, you know, for pleasure or happiness as he sees it here.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual motive is really a defeat. In other words, you're reborn. See, that's the interesting thing is that.
Johanna, were you referring to Sophie's father?
No.
Oh.
What I was referring to is how the monks even explained, and many of them are recovered heroin addicts who take on the Buddhist philosophy, and they say that they only found perfect love, perfect contentment within heroin, and that was a falsity. And to find the contentment in Malkuth is the striving, because they believe that you have to accept the suffering of the world. Very much like the chapter we read. You know, this is it. It's all God. This is all part of it. You suffer. I mean, it's not like, God is all good and things like that. This is it. You deal with it and you find contentment within yourself. To avoid. It is a fascinating series. I think anyone on the spiritual bend who deals with people with problems, as we all do, as counselors, spiritual counselors of sorts, right? Should see the series.
What?
It's called, it's on Current TV. What I will do is I'll try to find the link and I'll send it to the group. But
what is the name of the series?
Heroin.
Oh, it's heroin. Okay.
Yeah, heroin. I think that, and especially Paul, with your Eastern philosophy, and you would really glean a lot from it. But it's just like what we're talking here, you know, the cosmology. You're in perfection. Why would you want to go back?
Well, I mean,
maybe perfection is all it's cracked up to be. Buddhist monks, like all monks, nuns,
excuse me,
who commit to that kind of life, lead a very structured, disciplined life.
Yeah. You don't have to think much.
Yeah. Yes and no. I'm not going to say that.
That's
I agree with Paul.
We don't have to decide much. Let's put it that way. On a day-to-day basis, you don't have that.
Not in terms of the external.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is, I think it's a universal principle that perhaps one of the reasons Paul, for instance, made the remark our civilization is coming to an end is because our structural system, what little we had, we're a very young country, haven't been really firmly in place. And what we had has come tumbling down, literally.
What's being replaced is utter forms of oppression and domination.
Yeah. So you could also say indulgence. In our country, the great individuality, standing on your own 2 feet, the lack of community, isolation within the technologies we now have, and lack of face-to-face human contact that many people, I just think is a certain dehumanizing. And also the lack of the religious structures that people just took for granted. We no longer take those things for granted.
Frankly, I think part of the problem is the lack of the need to strive. When we lost our drive to strive, we kind of lost everything.
Well,
we all have that entitlement mentality now rather than an attitude of needing to strive, you know. And I think that's a big chunk of
the. Are you saying that materially strive?
Any kind of striving to better ourselves, to learn more, to be better than our parents were, to evolve, I guess. You know, we're all pretty content just sitting on the couch watching NFL football. You know,
a country. That's a big problem. That is a big problem. the opiate of entertainment.
Yes, we're entertainment junkies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We love distraction.
Yes, it is an issue. But I consider it a creative issue.
Yeah.
A huge issue in terms of the lack of the desire for creativity, but the lack of commitment to leading a creative life.
Well, somebody else will do it for us.
Right.
That's
right.
The attitude.
Culturally,
somebody else will do that.
Well, our culture does not support the creative.
No, it does not.
In the Wall Street Journal yesterday, they had a huge article. It started off on page 1, and then it took over all of page 18 on how authors are suffering because of e-books.
Mm-hmm.
And they cannot, I mean, there's no longer the ability to support themselves and their families, for instance, with partners or whatever, however their domestic situation, in other words, whatever domestic arrangement they have, they can't do it. They can't do it on what they make, and publishers are taking far fewer books. So, as readers or whatever you want to think of the population as, they're saying nobody reads.
Right.
That's part of the problem. So even with the e-books, nobody's reading.
Yep.
And it's a terrible indictment, because in impoverished countries, everyone who can read reads, and they read heavy-duty books.
Yeah.
So, that's all I have to say. It's a concern, but perhaps this is just a passing blimp.
Yeah.
In the phase. You know, if you look at books as a means of making a living, of writing as making a living, then you have a problem.
Well, yeah. No, that never was the case before. There was a small minority of authors who could make a living. What they're saying is that small minority no longer exists.
Okay, I found
the article. They're writing for the screen or for television.
It's called Heroine Facing the Dragon.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. I'll send. They have...
Now, isn't it interesting how heroine sounds like heroin?
Yeah. Oh, I was just thinking that. Just like 5 minutes ago, that was just. I thought, oh, that's a weird. Why do we use?
Well, you know, heroin? if you're not hung up on one, you're hung up on the other. I think. Does anybody else got anything more they want to say about the chapter or the story or the other things that we read today?
I have one quick comment. I loved the artwork on the pages where they're standing there deciding whether or not to jump. I just think that is, looking down the tree of life, I just thought that was so cool.
Yes, isn't it?
It was just really wonderfully done, I thought. So, anyway, that's my comment.
Okay.
And it's interesting, too, that it took a guy to get the gals to make the leap.
Yeah. Well, you can tell them that they could.
Well, right. Yeah, but actually, as I said, he's sort of a fool's choice there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It was, again, it's sort of, my thing is that Sophie wasn't prepared.
I think it's interesting that Sophie says, after they jump, wait, am I going to see you guys again? I mean, I think when she took the leap, she was thinking, okay, we're all going to go back now and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, on the way down, when it's too late to change her mind, she suddenly realizes, wait a minute, you know, am I going to see you guys again? And then, of course, she doesn't. They're gone.
It's interesting, too, to me, in the story of Genesis, Eve is the one that takes the bite of the apple and moves into consciousness. And the thing is, it's Steve that's taking the jump into consciousness.
Good point, David. Yeah.
But, you know, I also see it as an integration of the... of the animus to the anima.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And with the twins as well.
Yeah.
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 It is sort of like the Hieros Gamos. It is sort of like the sacred marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as I said, what it does is it falls short in terms of what it could have set up.
I thought he did a wonderful job.
It's fantastic. And I love that he allowed
with the limitations of the art form. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much longer could you go on?
Mm-hmm. And the limitations of the audience, frankly.
Yeah, the audience would not be interested in going through the Tree of Life up another series of paths on another level of.
We don't even do it when we teach or take classes in our Tarot and the Kabbalah and the Tarot.
Yeah.
We really don't thoroughly do that.
I mean, to actually, in this medium, to actually introduce
really
these kind of themes is big.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's like a primer. I mean, you're...
Exactly.
It's a primer. Yeah.
It's getting people thinking about it, things that they were probably never even aware of, you know.
Right.
I mean, think how many people reading comic books have never even heard of the Tree of Life. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with reading graphic novels.
Well,
the other thing is there
was a lot of flack about this being a really boring series, particularly the part that they did not like is the part which has come through.
Really?
That was the inner Tree of Life stuff.
Not enough action?
Well, it wasn't enough action and conflict. They wanted more conflict.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to get that because, Stacy and Sophia are going to, come to fisticuffs.
I kind of wondered about that, not having read ahead. It's like, I don't think that she's going to be real happy about, Stacy's going to be real happy about giving up the role.
No, she likes it. She likes, but, the thing here is that, it has to do with what I call the great, love-power divide. Stacy, it's all power.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
For Sophia, she realizes that there's this love and wisdom and temperance is involved.
I'll give you a little clue of something.
Do it then.
One of the major initiations that I come across for all people, and I'm talking about could be regular housewives, is the question of power and ego. And whether to walk away. This could be for any person, but I really find out that all of a sudden, if a regular person comes to me, and they have issues of spirit manifestations and things like that, and they're having a real hard time, it's usually because they're facing an initiation. This is like a secretary off the street, but why am I hearing voices? What's going on here? How come? And I said, you're going to have to make a choice. And I tell you that you've got to make the choice, and the choice is not of your ego. You have to ask yourself, is this my ego talking, or is this road I'm passing a road of ego or light? And many people don't understand that.
No. Oh,
they
no,
think, no. Th- no, they don't, and they wind up getting themselves into such crapola.
Because we live in a culture that glorifies the crapola.
Yeah.
But the choice is, like for instance, my husband's cheating on me. He came to me and he said he doesn't love me anymore, but I'll do anything to keep him. And I said, that's your ego talking. And the cards tell me it's meant that you let him go.
Yeah.
You have to let him go. What are you talking about? He's my husband. I said, but you cannot change his will. The free will. He has free will, as you do. And you have to respect that. Oh no, give me a spell. I'll go. If you don't give me a spell, I'll go to the woman, the Santeria down the block.
Yeah.
And I said, I said, you're doing wrong. You're doing wrong, and you'll pay for it. And sure enough, 2 years later, maybe, it won't be immediate, 2 or 3 years later, they come back, oh my God, I've only had bad luck. he left me anyway, even though I did all the stuff, the pot of beautiful ambrosia became shit, you know?
That's attachment and attachment and suffering and egotism are all part of the same complex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now my family is going through a little bit of a crisis with issue of custody of my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, my grandson's father, my third son, passed away when my grandson was 5 months old. And for the past 2 years, my oldest son, my grandson's uncle, has actually been his legal guardian because my grandson's mother was in a horrible place in her life right now, or at the time. And she is trying to get him back, and really, from a worldly viewpoint only, she doesn't need to have him back. He would not be safe with her. And yet part of me, I'm thinking, God, you know, I want him to stay where he is. He's so much better off, blah, blah, blah. But yet part of me, the little metaphysical part of me in the back of my head is saying, I don't know what karma he's supposed to be working
mm-hmm.
with his lifetime. Maybe he's supposed to be back with his mother so he can learn what he needs to learn, you know. And that's a very hard thing to think about when you're talking about a four-year-old child.
Right. You want to protect them. Yes, of course.
Yes. Yes. But I just, you know, there's still part of me. So the only affirmations I can throw out there are, you know, let it be for Harper's greater good. But whatever, you know, whatever happens, let it be for his greater good. It's so hard to do that, though.
Does this child live far from you?
No. My oldest son lives in Indianapolis. I'm in Anderson, Indiana, about 35 miles away.
Well, all I can say is, just picking up intuitively, you need a third party to evaluate the situation.
Oh, we've already had that done. The guardian ad litem has been at work and is recommending that Harper stay where he is for now,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to go through it again in another 6 to 8 months. I know we are.
Right. Oh, that's the nature of the situation.
Right.
I mean, I just, you know, I'd
love to. I think it's important that he knows you fought for him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, we are...
The outcome isn't in your hands, but you have to fight for him.
Yeah.
But I have to.
And I understand the mother's fight for him, too.
I do, too. As a mother myself, I absolutely do. But I have to tell you guys, I can't express what I just said about his karma and all that kind of stuff to my family. They look at me like, well, you're an idiot, you know? I mean, we need to protect this child. And we do.
Right. And you do, right.
But yet there's that little voice in the back of my head that's saying, we don't know what anything is about, really. That's right. So,
he might have been Adolf Hitler in his last life, and he needs to be put together with a completely crazy...
I would hope not, because he's such a delightful child. Of course, I'm his grandmother, and I'm supposed to say that. You know, he really is. I mean, he's bright, he's inquisitive, he's imaginative. I just don't want to see that spoiled.
I'm sure he's a wonderful, wonderful child.
Oh, and he also has a lot of his father in him. Not necessarily the better qualities, I have to say. He looks just like his father when he's mad. Does that tell you anything?
Mm-hmm.
He gets that look on his face, and I'm like, oh, my God, I have seen this look before. So.
But there was another thing in which I was thinking about here. You know, the aspect of walk-ins.
Uh-huh.
Well, you had said that, and I didn't understand where you were going with that when it came up in the chapter for you, Joanna.
Yeah, there is a whole belief that you can, through, like for instance, one day you wake up and you're not you. You're another person. You are taking on another spirit, almost like a divine possession.
Uh-huh.
Why is it divine?
Because
rather
it's...
Rather than demonic, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you can actually see it happen to people.
And you haven't answered the question. It can be demonic as well, right?
Well, yeah, but there is a divine possession. There is. There's a definite history of divine possession. Being of the spirit. Mm-hmm.
What tradition?
All traditions. Everything. St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Francis of Assisi. How come,
Are you saying about union with the divine?
No, it's not in the sense, it's just a higher level of self. that is manifested from
religion to be born again.
Yeah, but I born again, you see that the born again Christians have too much judgment to be Christians.
I'm using it as a metaphor. Using it
as a quote born again, end quote, right?
Yeah. Right, end quote, end quote.
You embrace everything, in a sense. You understand the world for what it is. It's epiphany, but it's not an epiphany because basically you take on a different persona.
Has this ever happened to you? I'm curious.
Me? Not. I don't know so much about me. I know that I did face the ego. The ego initiation. I had to, because what brought me to tarot basically was power. And to magic was the sense of power. And how, and we're going to cover it in the future chapters, you know. Sophie Promethea with Stacy Promethea. You know?
Also, we're going to deal with it with the temple.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to deal with the FBI.
Yep.
A variety of things are going to come.
I love it. We're talking about the Tree of Life, and then suddenly we're talking about the FBI. It's like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like culture class, mm-hmm, here, you know.
But Johanna brought up a very interesting point, the concept of power. And
the power is, divine power is over yourself. And you have to convert the ego power, I can do this and that.
It's a daily struggle. I think many people aren't even conscious that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And many people don't do it because they aren't aware that it needs doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why the hidden motivation is very important in the reading.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's very interesting to me to be in this world where not only is there a variety of cultures and beliefs and, you know, skin color and languages, but there's also a variety of spiritual evolvement. I think it is very interesting that we're all kind of lumped in here together, you know, banging up against each other, and it's very interesting.
And I found it very interesting that with all the reading and everything, the bubbles over here, that I go out to the humorous thing that I pinpoint. Oh, God, I hope the lettering is right. I could have gotten lost in this page like anyone else, saying, look at this, right?
By the way, I wanted you to, there is a correlation between the all born, all fed, all grown.
Uh-huh.
With some images, you can see that on spelled out for you in the PDF on page 327.
Oh, good. I'll look at that.
And 327. And there's an emphasis on the Buddhist wheel of the 12-fold links of dependent origination.
Hmm.
And which is a similarity.
Right. Yeah.
And then they give an example of the Wheel of Life from the Tibetan Tantra, partial Tibetan Tantra. That's Mahakala there, eating life. That's the red demon that's in that Tibetan one.
Wow. There's a lot of material to digest. I'm finding that each of these chapters, as we go along, are becoming more and more dense.
Yeah.
The whole Dots chapter was the most eye-opening for me. I had never been exposed to anything that gave me any kind of information, really, on that. And I found it, I was infinitely grateful to Promethea, the series, for that.
To close, I will close with a little citation here from Paradise Lost. What can we suffer worst? Is this then worst, thus sitting, thus consulting, thus in arms, what when we fled a man, pursued and struck, when heaven's afflicting thunder and besought the deep shelter us, this hell then seemed a refuge for those wounds, or when we lay chained on the burning lake, that sure was worse. What if the breath that kindled those grim fires awake should blow them into the sevenfold rage and buzz us into the flames? Or from above should we intermixed vengeance arm against his red right hand to plague us? What if all her stores were opened and thus a firmament of hell should spout her cataracts of fire? Impotent horrors threading hideous fall one day upon our heads while we perhaps designing or exhorting a glorious war, caught in a fiery tempest shall be hurled, each of us his rocks transfixed, the sport of prey of racking whirlwinds, and are forever sunk under your boiling ocean, wrapped in chains there to converse with everlasting groans, unrespited, unpitied, unreprieved, ages of hopeless end. This would be worse. War, therefore, open or concealed alike, my voice dissuades, for which can't force or guile with him. And who deceived his mind, whose eye views things all at one view?
Be careful what you wish for.
So I know why I speak in run-on sentences. I read too much Milton.
Too much
yes. That's wonderful.
Miltonese.
Yeah.
Miltonese.
There's iambic pentameter, and then there's Milton, you know.
Very good. Oh. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, people, I have to get going. So
thanks.
I'm going
take
to.
Care.
Thanks, everybody.
Next day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.